This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
David Swanson joins me live in studio. His most recent book is War is a Lie. He's online at davidswanson.org. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Your reactions to what you've been watching and hearing, a lot of us watching the events unfold, a democratic revolution in Egypt. What are your thoughts as this is going down?
Inspirational, phenomenal, unprecedented, needs to be built on. Of course, there are strong arguments that it's not yet a revolution, right? That the leader of the army has been replaced by the rest of the army. I mean, we're not yet there, but it is moving in that direction. And the army, is at least at the point of not firing on the protesters. And the dictator has resigned in response to public demand, and there is a new constitution and a new election in the works. And in the meantime, activist groups around the region and around the world are inspired and are taking action, and there are major strikes and protests and demonstrations underway in 6 or 8 countries in response to Egypt's success thus far. And this is huge.
Yeah.
And it's something that was in the works for years, for months. Even the New York Times today gives credit to Gene Sharp's academic influence on nonviolent organizing and all of the nonviolent training that Egyptians have done for years. If we wanted to save $1 trillion a year, we would stop spreading democracy with the Pentagon, and we would hire some Egyptian nonviolence trainers. 18 days, and look how far they've come compared to what, 9 years in Afghanistan and 7 in Iraq, and we've gotten nowhere.
And what do you mean by the nonviolence training? For those who haven't read these articles and have been following this, there's a history here to training these young Egyptians, Western training, right?
Who were reading about Martin Luther King's Montgomery bus boycott and all the rest of it. I mean, there's a rich history of the past 100 years around the world. They were strongly influenced by nonviolent activists in Serbia and in the rest of Europe and the Middle East, where it's, we hear about any outbreak of violence. Somebody throws a stone, all the cameras are there. But all those years and months that are left blank in any history of the Middle East contained a huge nonviolent activism of strikes and protests. And of course, it takes huge discipline and understanding to be able not just to turn out in protest, but to suffer the violence of Mubarak's thugs in this case, and not go home and not fight back, but send those who are beat up to the back of the line and have a new front line to be beat up. And when those people are injured, send them around to the back and move in shifts until the violent thugs of the dictator are defeated and retreat.
Yeah.
Without yourself resorting to violence, which would have been suicidal.
Now, of course, it doesn't always work. We remember very well the violence and the murders in Tiananmen Square that happened. Nonviolent young protesters standing their ground, and they were mowed down by the army. And we're seeing sort of similar, I don't want to say similar, but we are seeing actions, noteworthy, newsworthy actions in Iraq as well in the last 24, 48 hours as people have been attacked there as well protesting.
There have been
Iran. I'm sorry, not Iraq. Iran,
But Iraq as well.
Yeah.
There have been studies of nonviolent versus violent attempts to overturn tyranny in the past several decades, and nonviolent actions like this have they're batting maybe 500, but that compares to 20% success for violence and arguably less. I mean, when you have a violent overthrow, it's very hard to establish a nonviolent, stable civilian democracy going forward. We've never done it. When the United States military has gone into someone else's country, in recent cases, Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan, we have never once overthrown a government and established a permanent democracy that was peaceful and civilian and then pulled out. I mean, everybody will point to Japan and Germany, but, these are not precedents. These are not models. These are nations that were reduced to rubble, and we have yet to leave. So nonviolence does not always work, and we could get into what needed to be done better in China, but it works much more frequently than anything else.
Yeah. We're talking with David Swanson. DavidSwanson.org is the website. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. We have another David on the line. I believe it's David Toscano.
Hey, Coy. How are you doing?
Very good. David, you go right ahead.
Hey, hi, David. You know, I just wanted to comment because Gene Sharp is a good friend of mine. I studied with him in Boston, and we were speaking just 2 days ago about the Egyptian Revolution, and he was telling me that his book has been one of the few books that has been translated into Arabic and has been present in Egypt for a while, and the power of that struggle, not just in terms of its moral force, but as a political strategy to overturn dictators, has been demonstrated pretty clearly in Egypt. And so I figured that I would call in and comment, because I think David's raising a very good point about the ability of folks to influence events simply by either not cooperating with the government or taking to the streets and organizing in ways that bring pretty big change.
Yeah, David, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Sure, anytime.
That's David Toscano on the line, and David Swanson is live in studio. For those who don't know, haven't read his work, and might not be familiar with us, tell us who Gene Sharp is and the significance of his work being translated into Arabic.
Well, it's hugely significant. He's a strategist working in academia in the United States and has been for decades a leading strategist on nonviolent action, not pacifism, not apathy, not sitting back rather than shooting people, which are the two options we're often presented with, but nonviolent activism. He's categorized and systematized all the hundreds of different approaches and activities, from labor strikes to street theater to blocking doorways and streets and so forth, hundreds of different categories of actions, and gone through case studies from around the world looking at what succeeded, what hasn't, what could have been done better, in a real scientific approach that peace activists are often denounced by fans of war as being rather vague and incoherent and lacking a systematic strategy and analysis of history and so forth. You just have to give them one of Gene Sharp's books to refute that whole critique. I mean, absolutely brilliant.
There's a real science to it, in other words. There can be, if you want it to, there can be a science to this type of activism and protest.
Absolutely, there can and there is, and it is it has been proven in Egypt and elsewhere in recent years to be very beneficial to learn from the past and to build on what works best and avoid past mistakes. It's the greatest contribution that people are making to the world today.
We're talking with David Swanson online at davidswanson.org. Let me ask you about the reaction in the West, here in the States. We've seen a lot of hand-wringing. Initially, there was tremendous hand-wringing on the part, especially of, all the leaders. And then it was sort of seemed to be mostly conservatives. And then it was sort of the far right continued to wring their hands. Glenn Beck, I can't even say what he's just been a nut about reacting to this thing and saying that this is the Egyptian Revolution is the end of the world. You know, it just makes no sense to me. But what are your general thoughts about what we've witnessed in the States as this has been happening, this very historic 18 days?
Well, the U.S. government has supported and armed Mubarak and the Egyptian military rule for 30 years and had no interest whatsoever in changing that situation, in part because Egypt has upheld and to this moment is still upholding the blockade of Gaza, which is something that the Israeli government very much favors, despite the incredible human costs. And so everyone in the U.S. government, and this was made very clear by the State Department and the Pentagon and our emissary in those final days to Mubarak, didn't have any interest in the Egyptian people overthrowing that rule. Nonetheless, I think President Obama, I'm not going to speculate as to his personal beliefs, whatever that may mean in a U.S. president, but he has an interest in getting elected in 2012 and young people turning out to vote for him. And if he is seen as disregarding the will of the people, the entire population of Egypt, led by courageous young people, that doesn't help him at all with American young people when he's out to get. So he was sending very mixed messages, even while declaring, "I'm sending an unequivocal message." He was giving the most mixed message possible. and he was all in favor of Mubarak resigning once Mubarak had resigned, as were the rest of the Democrats in Washington. And so you will hear a lot of fear now coming out of Washington and people like Glenn Beck about the future of Egypt. And you'll hear a lot of red herrings about what that fear deals with. You know, Egypt's going to be a theocracy. Egypt's going to become as religious as the Republican Party. You know, and
they're working so hard to make it a boogeyman when we don't even yet know what's going on, except for the fact that people want democracy.
Well, my fear is that there's not going to be enough change, that we're going to have. You know, we Mubarak put our torturer, our rendition pal, in power. Now the army is in power, and we're acting as if that's something different from Mubarak, who was the army, and we're treating this guy as vice president when he was never put up for election at all. The fear of theocracy and the fear of an attack on Israel and so forth, I see no basis for that whatsoever. But I do have a very different fear that there will not be true democracy in Egypt. And in fact, all of the mainstream U.S. media, not just the Glenn Becks, are talking about how difficult it will be to have real democracy in Egypt when we don't know ahead of time who the leader will be. And the perverse understanding of democracy that illustrates is just stunning. You know, first you have democracy, then you choose leaders, right? Yeah. You don't get to know who the leader is going to be and then have what the U.S. media calls democracy. But that gives you a sense of what they mean by democracy here in our country.
Yeah. We're talking with David Swanson. DavidSwanson.org is the website. And Frank is in Charlottesville. Frank, thank you so much for your call. You go right ahead.
Thank you for taking it. I'm curious about the billions of dollars we've been giving to Egypt each year, supposedly for military defense. I'm not sure against whom, but I suspect it was more like a bribe, and I'm sure we do this all over the world. What will happen to that money now? Who would go to? And just curious about that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
Well, Mubarak remains probably the wealthiest individual on the planet, and most of that money, estimated at as much as $70 billion, has been stolen from the people of Egypt and the people of Gaza to some extent. But a chunk of it comes from U.S. taxpayers who gave him about $2 billion a year for the past few decades. And three-quarters of that was for weapons, turn around and buy weapons from U.S. weapons makers. So it's a jobs program for our leading industry, the export of weapons.
We're just routing it through the Middle East and then back into American
right. U.S. tax dollars treasuries, give it to not just Mubarak, but dictators around the world who then give it to U.S. Weapons makers, but keep a chunk for themselves. And a chunk of what they give to the weapons makers goes back to Congress, and a chunk goes back to the corrupt government of the dictatorship and so forth. But that money, there's been no indication that will stop. Senator Leahy said several days before Mubarak resigned, if he does not resign immediately, we will cut off that money. This is the chairman of the relevant committee in the Senate. But then he went dead silent. Obama has never said one word about stopping that money. And this is money that the Egyptian army depends on, and the Egyptian army is still in power. And so there is a huge question in Egypt. The activists are very much involved in, will we get that $70 billion back from Mubarak for the people of Egypt? But they are also, to some extent, wisely concerned with what is the influence of the United States going to be through the Egyptian military going forward.
Now, it's likely we're going to see the Egyptian people, if their voice is heard democratically, we might see Egypt taking a different stand regarding Gaza. Give us a Gaza 101 really quick, so because a lot of Americans just have no idea of the players and what we're talking about here, and then explain what we might then see in the future as a possible a better representation of Egyptian sentiment among the people.
Gaza is about twice the size of D.C. and about twice the population. It's a very small area. It's walled in on three sides and the water on the other. And they people are forbidden to leave and re-enter at their will. Many basic necessities and food goods are prohibited under the rationale of prohibiting the entry of weapons into Gaza. Gaza is one isolated piece of what's left to the Palestinians after the Israeli takeover and occupation of territories, and it is.
So they've just walled them in, basically.
It is a people being collectively punished by the Israeli military with an assistance from the Egyptian military. The two main ways into Gaza, one in the north in Lebanon, and the main one in the south through Egypt. This is where people try to get in and out of Gaza. Citizens of Gaza, including with co-citizenship here in the United States, repeatedly have been locked up in Cairo's airport and refused to permission to even get to the border of Gaza, and people have been forced to wait for weeks and months to get into Gaza if they can at all, and of course just prior to the Obama presidency and ceasing the day before Obama's inauguration, Israel bombarded Gaza and killed a great many people, shooting missiles everywhere in Gaza, with no punishment, no accountability whatsoever. I mean, an incredible crime of aggression. And so one question is, with Egypt under democratic rule, would the people of Egypt continue to assist in that blockade of Gaza, or would they allow free flow of people and goods and medicine and injured human beings who want to get to a hospital in Egypt and so forth? It's a very different question, to my mind, from would Egypt attack Jerusalem, which, you know, there is no indication of whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I personally think that's a little crazy to sit here in the West and think, oh, my gosh, a free Egypt's going to try to destroy Israel. What? Where is any evidence for that?
Well, there isn't. I mean, the grain of truth that it's built out of is that there are Muslim extremists in Egypt, and there is a relatively powerful group with a Muslim identity called the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
But their open position is opposed to that, and they are not a majority force in Egypt, and they don't seek to be. And so it's a boogeyman. But the truth underlying those fears in Washington is that it is much more difficult for the White House to tell a truly democratic government what to do. It's much easier to tell a dictator.
Let's rejoin our conversation with David Swanson, the situation in the Middle East, and Bob is in Ivy. Bob, thank you for your call. You go right ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to get a little bit more breadth on your conversation. It sounds like to me that the Israelis are really pretty much the bad guys. They want to shoot up the guys in Gaza, and they have no right at all to sort of be concerned about Egypt attacking them. Wasn't it true that the whole basis for the Gaza occupation was following the Egyptians' attack on Israel, and the fact that the rockets were being shot into Gaza was the result of the Israelis being attacked by the Palestinians? I'd love to have, you know, some feedback on that perspective, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Good deal, Bob. Great questions. Thank you very much for your call, David. Are the Israelis the bad guys?
Well, no,
is there enough bad to go around here?
I don't think we should categorize any nationality of people as bad guys or good guys. I think it's very, very dangerous. But I do think that there is some truth in what the caller said, that there have been rockets shot from Gaza into Israel that have killed people. They've been I mean, if you're going to look, if you're going to count the numbers of dead, Gaza has killed, you know, a handful of Israelis to thousands of people in Gaza killed by Israel, but neither is remotely justifiable. And if you look at the nonviolent resistance in Gaza and Palestine over recent decades to the crimes and abuses committed by the Israeli military, that resistance has gained strength to the extent that it has stayed nonviolent. And similar efforts within Israel, the efforts of Israeli military mothers to get Israel out of Lebanon that were successful, have have succeeded to the extent that they have stayed nonviolent and civilized. And when Gazans and Palestinians have turned violent, whether it's shooting rockets or throwing stones, it has been counterproductive, extremely counterproductive. And so I think that there is a huge lesson for the people of Gaza from the people of Egypt and elsewhere around the world where we have seen successes.
We only have about a minute or two left. What's your advice for how we should continue to read this? Because clearly the word we keep hearing on the news is fluid. This is a fluid situation. It remains so despite Mubarak stepping down. This remains incredibly fluid, I would say, and always will. There's the potential for great violence here until we have a functioning democracy in Egypt, and we don't have anything close to that right now.
We don't. We only have vague promises, and I think to the extent that the Egyptians stay organized and stay active and stay and continue to pressure their demands without overly compromising, we will see success. I think there is a huge danger in backtracking and losing the momentum that they have gained. Egypt is banning strikes. Egypt is declaring military rule. Not that that's exactly new. And to the extent that these things are accepted because the one dictator has left, Egypt will fail.
David Swanson, he's online at davidswanson.org. His most recent book is War is a Lie. David, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.